Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is going to be a good one. This is somebody you've been looking forward to for, what, a couple weeks now, huh?
No, I really have. You know, we got this young lady's book in the mail, and let's be honest, we get hit with a lot of books. But I took this one home because I was so intrigued with the title. The title of the book is The 36 Ancient Chinese Strategies for Modern Business. And I got to tell you, man, I was riveted. I love the way that it's set up with these, we'll ask her, but I think the term is like idioms, these little short phrases of advice. And then the way that she has it organized. And I found some things that were very validating. And I felt really good about our business here at Business Radio X. And Lee, I found at least a half a dozen where I'm like, you know, I think we've been on the other side of that one. I think someone has done that to us. So, yes, I think we're in store for a marvelous segment. So please join me in welcoming to the broadcast author, speaker, trusted advisor, president with Lead Across Cultures International, Miss Lon Percuse. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you? And it's my pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and for taking the time to write this book. What was the book writing experience? Is this your first book?
This is my first book, and it took me 3 years to finish it. But however, it's a lifelong journey. Yeah.
So what was the impetus to the idea for the book?
Let me take you back. On a rainy day in 1979 in Saigon, Vietnam.
Oh, well.
Yeah, and... You want to hear more?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Go for it.
And it was 4 years after the end of the Vietnam War, the Vietnam War. And it was my 7th birthday. So my mom took me to a back alley in a city part of the city. And when we came, you know, a very shady, rucky kind of guy waved to us to follow him to a very dark, secluded alley. And he, you know, signaled to us not to cause any commotion. And, you know, at the very first time in my life, you know, at that age, I had a chance to soak in the abject squalor of the scene and the smell of rotten trash and everything. And then out of the darkness came a little boy who handed me a basket of eggs. So underneath hay, you know, straw and eggs, you know, I found two things. An English-Vietnamese dictionary and a skinny, tiny, tattered book. The Art of War. And I just go through quickly that, you know, the English-Vietnamese dictionary at that time, I have to say that, you know, when the communists took over Saigon in 1975, there were a lot of changes. Mm-hmm. And one of which is that all the foreign literature had to be smuggled.
Right, because they got rid of all that, right?
All that, right? And the English-Vietnamese dictionary gave me hope. You know, let me know that there are more than starvation and hunger and darkness in the world. And The Art of War, the book that really gave me the way, and that was the beginning.
And that was written in English or Vietnamese?
No, it was in Chinese, but it has some, I would say, the Vietnamese, Sino-Vietnamese language too. Mm-hmm. It's very close. So
you were able to understand it a little bit? A
little bit along the way. But, you know, I had no choice. There were no books, no nothing. I had to struggle with it. I love it. Whatever it is, you know. I got the books, you know. We didn't have any literature back then to read as children.
Now, how did you get to America?
I moved here in 2000. I met my husband who traveled there. So I moved here in the year 2000.
Okay, so you had heard about America. Did you think you would move here at some point in your life?
You know what? I didn't think about that. You know, it just happened, and I believe that sometimes it's just fate.
So, what were you doing in Vietnam for your career?
Yeah, career. I want to cut it short. I graduated from college there, and I had a business. I partnered with. Another partner, we had a distribution network. We distributed imported cosmetics and personal care around the country right after 1 year before college.
And oh, really?
And then
before
after
college,
that,
you were an entrepreneur.
Yes, yes. I started 1 year after, before my graduation. And then after 3 years, I realized that I needed some skills. The business was okay. I didn't go bankrupt or anything. Uh-huh. But you know what? It was not exciting as I wanted. And I knew that I needed something. So I joined British Petroleum. Mm-hmm. And where that I started.
So they were, when you explained to them that you went to college and you were an entrepreneur, were they, was that attractive for them? Did they like that combination?
For
BP.
Oh, absolutely. That totally, you know, at my age, and I spoke four languages and had some entrepreneurial experience in the context of a country that before that you were not allowed that. And
right.
I was one of the very first people who started limited companies, you know, all of that kind of concept, which is very novel, very new at that time. So because of that, those are the stepping stones for me. Go there. I didn't do anything with BP before, but I got very high position from the very beginning.
Now, how was that like? Was there a lot of other women there, or were you?
There are a lot of women. However, I was the only one. I would say the youngest female executive in the boardroom with men. And I remember most of them had salt and pepper hair. Yeah. It was, you know, intimidating at first. It's a strange feeling. However, when I go back, I have, you know, read The Art of War for pleasure, for fun, for getting some strategies to get out of the situation. And I have learned that, you know, I will introduce to you later the ability to survive, to thrive, to navigate and conquer in an ever-changing situation. And if you can master that, I think you can, you know,
do
make
anything,
it anywhere
yeah.
you want.
So now, so the first time you read the book was when you were a child?
No. I read the book. You mean the
Art of War?
Where, yeah, I was little. Yeah. I barely understood. I mean, just little by little, I asked this and that. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, we're very young.
But
yeah.
It obviously had quite an impact in your life.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah.
Did you keep rereading it as you got older?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Until now, when I wrote this, I still come back. And, you know, it's just like when you watch a movie, right? When
right.
you go back,
and you
always see
find
something.
New things, right?
Exactly. Even deeper, more profound, in a different light. Yeah, I always do.
So the Art of War is the inspiration for this book? Is it the catalyst? How would you describe the relationship with your book and The Art of War?
The 36 strategies also was in the history already written, and is a compilation of all the strategies written by hundreds of warriors and generals during the wars about over 2,000 years ago in China. And in the most turbulent era of the history, where, you know, every state tried to annex and conquer the other and try to unite them into one. And again, it's very interesting because I find out one thing that I really can resonate to that. It's all about how to win when you are even in an inferior position,
mm-hmm.
how to make the best of what you have. And that's very cool because, you know, if I have a chance, I explain why it resonated to me later. I don't want to be so lengthy about this. But that really resonated with me. You know, the two prominent figures are General Sun Tzu and the philosopher Lao Tzu.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for Sun Tzu, he led an army of 2,000 men and defeated an army of 200,000 troops just because of the strategies, how he learned how to outsmart mm-hmm. the competition, and that resonated to me.
So I have to tell you were talking about going back and rereading the Art of War. That's exactly how I've been treating your book. After I got through about the three or four chapters, I was thinking, wow, there's a lot of good stuff here. I should be writing this down or highlighting it or whatever. So the commitment I made to myself was, I'm going to read it through this way. And then I'm going to go back through and read it again and highlight and underline stuff because I got to tell you, your book is exactly, it's that type of book where it's the kind you're going to want to go back through and read more than once.
Thank you.
Now, why do you think that the metaphor of war is appropriate for business?
You know, there's a saying, the Chinese saying, the marketplace is the battlefield. Mm-hmm. And the Japanese say that business is war. You know, it's all competition, how you gain the market share, how you can expand your market segment, all of that. You know, however, the war thing in America, you know, politically correct, it could be a little bit violent and all of that. But, you know, in Asia, it's like part of life. You know what I mean? Because especially where I come from, you know, we've been through 1,000 years of war.
Right.
War against the Chinese. And then in 1975, you know, when the Vietnam War was over, we thought it was over. And then we had to fight the war against the Chinese in the north of the border. And then the Khmer Rouge, Cambodian in the south. And, you know, it's like that. However, and for today's context, I believe that it has some hook to it, too. It makes it more exciting.
But do you see business as adversarial or collaborative? Or is it possible to be both?
That's a very, very good question. In nowadays context, and we are living in a very globalized.
And very interconnected.
Interconnected,
world, right?
Intercultural. And it's not anymore a zero-sum game, I believe that, in wartime.
But that's an important distinction, right? Because historically, I was taking your land so I could have it. And yeah. Now it seems like we're spending more time working together, figuring out how both of us can prosper.
Exactly.
Because you being successful helps me be successful.
Right, right. Absolutely. In the wartime, it seems like, you know, it's a zero-sum game.
Right.
Nowadays, it's not anymore. However, there are some very good time-tested wisdom in the wartime that we can apply today. And again, you know, it's a little edgy, but I believe that we have laws and convention, and you know, the constructive or destructive ideas or application depends on the mind who wields it.
So tell us a little bit about the work, because there's the book, but you're out speaking both here domestically and internationally. Do you also do consulting work? And if so, what kinds of engagements do you find yourself working?
I have two arms of in my business. In Asia, I work with multinational companies to cultivate their global leaders. And right now, I am helping with one major company to cultivate in about 6 countries in Southeast Asia. To do that, it's really fun. You know, how to become more global leaders in this very, as you said, you know, very interconnected, intercultural
right.
context. Your value, you know, you are in a meeting room. You have an American manager, an Indian engineer, a Vietnamese technician, a Costa Rican manager, and then we all, on the surface, we speak the same English language.
Right.
However, underneath, how we make decisions.
Right. There's a long history we've all lived, right, through
exactly.
our families. And so we might be looking at the same thing slightly differently.
Yeah, the value system, how you make decision, how you resolve conflict. To you think, I'm insane. Why would you do that? But to me, like, why you are so cut? You know what I mean? So I will come in and help them.
So you're like the translator? You help us all understand each other better?
That is a very good analogy, yeah. I would help them to bring out the best from their people.
Right,
yeah.
Because sometimes there's a disconnect, right? Because if the firm is a global firm and they're in their country and they can't just say the same thing and they may not hear it the same way in a
exactly.
different country, right?
Absolutely. I hear you. I show you just one very interesting story, like this one very international speaker, and he normally uses that $1 sign, you know, like
right.
here in America, we like this human nature, you know, we strive to get more prosperous and everything. And okay, who wants his money? This and that. It works very well here. It, you know, it's shock and it's,
right.
you know, catch attention. In Asia, and I was there, especially in Saigon at that time, 3 years ago, and he did that. And there was one older, I would call a military general in the audience, and he stood up and he told the translator to translate to the speaker that, you know, like, take away that $1. It's insulting to
right,
us.
Right, it's disrespectful.
Very disrespectful, and I know it's going to happen because you know you just
saw
know.
It.
You
right,
just
you
saw
it coming, right?
Exactly.
Well,
mean,
you saw it coming.
Right.
Obviously, the speaker didn't
exactly.
see it coming.
But you see, of course, it doesn't mean that they don't want money. They do,
right.
of course. But how they
you
approach it.
You have to do it in a little more elegant manner.
Exactly.
Right?
The nuances, the subtleness.
Right.
Oh, gosh, make a big difference. And I myself, sometimes, you know, even though I'm in this industry and I do this, sometimes if I don't study careful and pay really attention and just look on the surface, I can.
You can see how those mistakes
faux
happen,
pas,
right?
So you call it in French, say right. Faux pas. Yeah, right. yeah.
So what have you found to be some of the best strategies for marketing yourself as a speaker and a consultant? And I'm asking because a great many of our listeners are aspiring entrepreneurs, and many of them are aspiring speakers and authors, but I'm sure they would appreciate any counsel you could provide on how to just get out there and effectively market yourself and get the work.
Right. For my business, I don't think that I do anything new at all. I would say that, you know, you get out there, you network and speak and get to know people, associate with higher level association, and just be out there, spread your word, and that's very important. And I find that one of the major reasons for my, you know, pretty rapidly move to the next level in my business.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And it's the importance, I would imagine, of developing these networks, yeah. right, and these relationships,
yeah.
and nurturing it and cultivating it, so
right.
they see that you are an authority right. and you know what you're talking about, and you can really make a difference
right.
in the organization.
Yeah, and another thing is very important. Right, recently, I am invited to be on a team of executives of I'm not allowed to say the name of the company,
sure.
But you know, we travel all over the globe to assess. The talents in their talent pool. It's very fun. It's just like not Shark Tank, but it's more like a survival kind of thing. You don't train them, but you sit down 3 days with them, about
with
10 of
the
us.
The leaders of
with 10 of us, you know, executives from different countries. We get there and we have all those talents, and they put them together, give them very dramatic scenarios in business, you know, setting.
Right.
How they negotiate, how they convince, how they get deal, this and that, after 3 days. And then we sit down with each and every of them and write down, you know, assess them, their strengths, their weaknesses,
wow.
what they can work on, improve. Wow. This is a very exciting program.
And then the person, I'm sure, in that short period of time gets a lot of knowledge and learning that is really, they can quickly use it in real life, right?
Yeah.
This
yep.
isn't theoretical. This
no.
is stuff that's really
it is
practical,
real.
Right?
Very practical. And the thing I want to bring down here is that that happened very organically, because all the global leadership program I do, I did with all my passion and my heart. And it showed. And then that's why they, you know, they want me to be part of their very honorable team. And again, you know, you get our network and then you deliver. Over deliver,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it pay off. It pays off.
I'll tell you, there's no better sales tool than doing good work.
Yeah,
yes.
yeah.
That works better than any technique,
right.
any literature, anything like that. Okay, so it's my show, so let's invest a little time in me if we could. I got the book. I really like the book. I am one of a team of four executives here at Business Radio X. I'm really enamored with it. Short of bringing you in to consult with us. Do you have some ideas of some things that I could do with me and my three colleagues where we could go through this book in some structured way? Any advice on how we might do that? A team of four, a team of 10, a team of 40. How we might, because it's just so much material.
Right, yeah. right. Yeah. Okay. If you go back to my material first, and I would like to know more what challenges you are facing with, but we just go back to the book. I would say, yeah, they are 36. It's very hard to remember. I try to keep it that way because that's the original
right.
number. Mm-hmm. However, they all boil down to the 8 main principles. They are adopt, alternate, add, allure, ally, associate, acquire, and avoid.
So there's your 8 management, your 8 executive team meetings right there, right? Focus them around that.
Now, which one of those do you see businesses needing the most help in?
I would, if you don't have time, I would like to focus on the first thing, you know, how you adopt, for example, especially in nowadays, in a very, I mean, crazily
fast moving, right?
Fast moving and
multicultural. This is
Everything changes. Look at the phone we have. Like the next day, I'm like, I'm a very low tech person. I'm like, it takes me forever just to learn a few icons, and now I see something else.
It's a different phone.
You know. So anyway, to do that, we have to have an unbelievable skill how to adopt.
Right.
You adopt a concept, an idea, a process, and give it a slight new twist. And then how you modify it, you know, by, you know, combining, magnifying, minimizing, reducing, eliminating whatever, you know, the ingredients, just like you cook, right? Ingredients,
sure.
The parts, the components. Then you will make a new product, like a friend of mine I know, just show you an example. Very, very simple. He sells mushroom. He sells mushroom to restaurants.
Right.
It's not a very exciting job. It's okay. You know, he's been, you know, it's okay with that. However, when he really sit down and listen to his customers, and they have one thing, all the restaurant owners, they don't like. They hate the process of cutting, slicing the mushroom. It's for some reason, it takes too long. They don't like it. They don't know how to keep them fresh for long. And he comes back and says, why don't I just, instead of, you know, I can sell whole mushroom and sliced mushroom and sliced and washed mushroom. And it cost him almost nothing to have them sliced and washed in his factory.
Right.
But it cost like 5 times more for restaurant owners to have the more highly
they're highly
skilled,
right.
Exactly. It's a wonderful win-win situation.
So
just
listening to your customer is kind of important, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Not only customers, to everyone. Listening is a wonderful, you know, communication skill. Yeah. Adopt and give it a little new twist.
So you give it your own unique creative twist.
Yeah, absolutely.
So did any parts of this book come together for you really easily, and then other parts like, wow, you really struggled with
well, she had to get 36. Did you get like stopped and you're like, I only got 25. I got to come up with 11 more of these.
I'm so glad that you asked me a question. I had three editors of my book, and there's one gentleman, you know, I'm so glad I worked with him, and that is the stratagem.
She can't even remember. It was such a
You hear me now? Right. You know, stratagem number. Let me look at the table of contents. I believe that is stratagem number 31. Yeah. The beauty trap. Use a woman to ensnare a man.
Right.
Okay. I have so many stories and example in that.
You do.
and then personal stories and you know, other stories that I observe in the business world. And I wrote them all, and I sent them to my editor, and he got back and said, crappy. I want new stuff. And I said, new stuff I have in my, you know, and he doesn't want it. And then I said, Lon, you are too subtle. What do you mean? I read beauty. You're a woman. It's not a man. I want more. I want more. I said, please don't push me, you know. And he said, no, this is too subtle. You know, you don't go to that point yet. I said, okay, you really want something?
If you're
going
to bring it up, you got to bring it up, right?
I said, bring it up. I said, are you sure? Are you sure, Mike? I said, yeah. And I wrote him another story, and he said, oh, no, this is way too much. So that's the one. But anyway.
I'm reading 31 tonight.
Yeah. I would have read that one first.
Yeah, but anyway, it all boils down. It's very interesting, you know. I go down to the principle to allure. How do you tease? How do you appeal to senses and emotions to sell a product or service or anything? Because you know what? Logic makes people think, but emotions make people act.
Mm-hmm.
When they act, they spend, they do
exactly.
stuff, right? What you need. That's it all about. How do you allure to that? How do you appeal to senses and emotions? How you tease? How do you shape perceptions?
How do you do it?
You need to read my book.
You gotta buy the book.
See, well, she's teasing. That's it. She's being alluring right now.
That's right. She's exhibiting. So I want our listeners to know, because this is one of the things that I think got me engaged fast and kept me there. The way that the material is organized, every chapter kind of opens up with long ago in China. Then there's modern applications. Then there's implementation tactics. And then there's questions to consider, for whatever my opinion is worth, Lon, I just think that that structure is brilliant and very engaging. And I think for that reason, I think it really lends itself to ongoing in-depth study or quick review.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate that. When I wrote that, and I had that in mind too, I know that we all are very busy, and maybe we have time to read it at the airport or something, or sometimes you don't even have time. You just go to one section,
right?
You know, you know what I mean? You don't have time to read all of that. So in order to just to go through that very short, a long time ago, about the history in China, you know, it looks very short like over there, but it took me forever to make it short. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just like when you speak, you know, Stone,
right,
that they say, okay, right, you have one day. Oh, it's a piece of cake. But they tell you, you stand in front of 1,000 people and you have 25 minutes.
Right, fit it all in there.
And you know what? It takes tremendous work to, you know what I mean? It's very different. So the same here. And I really appreciate that you point that out. Yeah.
Well, it's excellent context, that one section, and I'm sure you felt like you had an obligation to be accurate with your facts, because that's a very factual history and lays the foundation in the context, which for me opens my mind, intrigues me now to want to hear. And sometimes I'm like, how in the world is she going to apply this to the modern world? And darned if you don't. A follow-up question. Lee and I talk a lot about speakers and particularly comedians. Lee is a real student of comedy.
Wow.
And one of the things that...
Can I be your student?
You're doing a great job.
So one of the things that Lee observes, and I've seen it now that Lee's called it to my attention, is that, you know, those comics at the top of their game, they walk through life observing, and they see things that are funny, then they go home, massage them, and then present them through that comic lens. And I suspect when you're out doing your thing, you probably see stuff just in everyday life, and you're probably connecting dots to these 36 stratagems. Is that accurate?
That is so true. That is so true. Thank you for, you know, elaborating on that. That's beautiful. I don't know. I mean, I don't have anything better to say. That's wonderful. That's very true. And even when I finish this book, and I come back and I observe some of the stuff, I say, oh my gosh, there's a link between that. You know what I mean? It's, oh, hey, this is great. I keep it maybe for the next edition. Something, it even go deeper in the concept. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, is this book, do you think, a good tool for women in business?
Absolutely. It's a very good tool for women. Actually, I use this quite often to speak at, women in business, women how to win the battle in your career for women. Yeah, it's absolutely applicable for women.
Now, it must have been challenging for you to go from where you started and you were jumped, kind of fast forwarded into the corporate world, and you had to kind of battle your way through that. You had to battle as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So you kind of lived these things.
I believe so. Yep, absolutely. If you read, you will see a lot of personal touching in it. It's not, I purposely don't want to use all those, you know, data analysis and stuff in this
book.
Right,
you want real anecdotes of real stories from real people.
Yeah, and a lot of, some I use real names, some the narrative, they don't want me to use a real name, so I change some names.
Now, is there a story that you can remember in your career that you'd like to share?
Absolutely. All right. As you just asked, I moved to America in the year 2000 to this wonderful country with tremendous, tremendous opportunities. I love it. But of course, you know, I had to rebuild my personal
your network and connections, right?
Yeah, I bet.
Professional identity. And, you know, I came here when I'm already old. I mean, you know, I'm already built my circle of influence back home with all the sweat, with all the effort. So, you know, you have to rebuild everything again, even your degrees and everything. And fast forward at a convention for the National Speakers Association in San Diego. And I talked to this one lady. She is a... bureau agent. So I asked her, I said, if she would like to represent me, you know, for you to know, the agent, they represent you, they sign contract, they market you to speak at events and do presentation and stuff, and they get some commission. So when I asked her, without any hesitance, she told me, you know, she said, well, you are a woman and you are Asian. it's much harder for us to sell you. And, you know, nothing personal at the end of the day, it's a business decision.
Right.
We wouldn't want to invest in somebody that we wouldn't at least with even the same or higher commission.
Right.
That's it. And she's very candid. Yeah, at least she didn't waste my time.
Sure didn't. So, but it didn't stop you from pursuing anything.
Thank you. Yeah, you're right. And you know, it's very, the truth, you know, she's in the business for a long time. The reason I asked her, because she made a presentation. I loved it.
Right.
Very candid, very honest, you know, no sugarcoat, very cutthroat. I like it. So I got a chance to hear the truth.
Right.
And you're right. Thank you for saying that. It didn't stop me, but it helped me to identify my disadvantage, because I could be delusional. You know, people say, okay, you are here in America.
You can do anything.
Mm-hmm. You know, making the impossible possible. Oh, that's great. But you need to know some limitation and disadvantages so that you can work on something. So I have a good grip of that.
And then you can adopt your own unique spin on things.
Absolutely.
Right?
You
can follow your book here, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I look at that. I say, yeah, those are my disadvantages. But Sun Tzu has a saying that your strengths could become your weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
And you can turn your weaknesses into new possibilities.
That's right.
I got it. Yeah, I could turn my, you know, not very, something different could be a perceived.
It could be a positive.
Disadvantage into something, you know, new possibilities. You know, how about compete not on a very crowded place? Compete when you say something that, you know, not many people know much about, unless you have been through all the kind of hardship and, you know, I mean, that kind. You cannot have that perspective if you have not been through that. Yeah.
And then you stand out because you might be the only fish in that sea, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
No, it's a great point because obviously it was not an option to stop being female or stop being Asian.
Right.
So you had to take what you had and utilize that to capitalize on the environment and the opportunities available. And my hat is off to you. Kudos to you. So what's next? Where are you going to be focusing your energy in the coming months and throughout 2015?
Oh, this has been a fascinating year, especially for the book, and I got very good bookings. I'm going to be in at a very cool all about cooking event planning, you know, showcase in Las Vegas at Caesar Palace, you know, and they want me to speak about this, and with other organizations too. I love what I'm doing. And I don't know how to say it. I work very hard, and it doesn't seem like work for me. I would just say, you know, it is so rewarding that the people I meet, somehow I make an impact on their life, and, you know, they don't know that I have learned so much from them. For example, I train them. They are doctors. They are pharmaceutical. They are medical advisors. They have no idea what I do. Or they are lawyers, you know. No idea. In their business. However, the principle is and then I have learned so much because I have interacted with them. I have gained so much knowledge from them by just being with them. And I think that makes my life so rich.
Right.
I don't want to trade anything for that.
Now, that's an important thing for young people, especially, is you really have to be a lifelong learner in today's world, right?
Oh,
you can't just go to school for a period of time and think you're done and you don't have to pick up a book anymore.
You're right.
You have to kind of have a hunger for learning and want to learn more from books and from people.
Thank you, Lee. I love that. That is so true. So true. Yeah. And you know what? Without learning and growing, we will wither and we will die.
That's right.
All right, so where can our listeners go to get their hands on this book and to reach out and have a substantive conversation with you or someone on your team if they're looking at engaging you as a speaker or having you speak with them about their business objectives? What's the best way for them to reach out?
Website?
My website, leadacrosscultures.com.
And the book, you can get it at Amazon, I'm
sure. You go Amazon, you can Google my name. That's a short way. The name of the book is a bit long. Just Google Lan Berku, and then it will pop.
That's Lanbercu.
Or, you know, the 36 Ancient Chinese Strategies for a Modern Business.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for participating in the show today.
Thank you so much. I had such a blast. Thank you.
Great. Yeah. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Peyton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.